Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
So recently, accounting and auditing firms have been put into the spotlight and, well, all for the wrong reasons.
And this is after a spate of corporate governance scandals, including Wirecard, close to home here in Singapore, oil trading company Hin Leong, Zenrock, and Hyflux.
Ah, yes. Even in the UK, authorities are stepping up the pressure on the sector to break up the big four. That's Deloitte, EY, KPMG, as well as PwC, due to potential conflicts of interest, so to speak, between their consulting and auditing businesses.
So there's more need to be done in this aspect. We have on the line with us Mak Yen Tin, Associate Professor of Accounting from NUS Business School. Good morning to you, Mac.
Yes.
Hey, Prof. Good to hear from
you.
Good morning. Let's talk about these auditing issues that we're seeing. I mean, plot thickens in the spectacular collapse of payments provider Wirecard. That was in the spotlight a couple of weeks ago. EY failed for more than 3 years to request crucial account information from a Singapore bank where Wirecard claimed it had up to $1 billion in cash. And, you know, you would think that that's a routine audit procedure which could have uncovered, you know, all this fraud at the German payments group. I mean, what do you think happened there? How on earth could such a thing happen, in fact?
Well, as you say, you know, the bank confirmation is a very standard audit procedure. So you got to ask why EY did not get bank confirmation directly from the bank. It looks like they relied on management too much.
Kind of like, I hate to use the word lazy, but in that sense, right?
Yeah, because it looks like they just get the documents and screenshots that were shown by management. And that's a no-no, right? Bank confirmation, you go directly to the bank. And over here, we actually had similar situations where auditors have been, particularly in some of the S-chips, where money was supposed to be in the bank. And again, you know, the companies were able to forge the amount, you know, to fake the amount. But, you know, you would think that today, you know, auditors would be much more savvy about such things.
Shouldn't there already be a procedure with regard to bank confirmation? Because you mentioned it was a case of just getting some screenshots.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like, by all accounts, they didn't get it directly from the bank. So, you know, what Wirecard did was, you know, although it's German-based bank, right, essentially, it didn't keep the money in Germany. So it paid the cabbie in those escrow accounts. And initially, in one of those banks was OCBC, where a lot of the money was supposed to be there. And then it was supposed to be transferred to the Philippines bank, you know. But apparently, they didn't get it directly from those banks at all. So, you know, I think the first question they should have asked is, why keep it in Singapore Bank and the Philippines Bank, right? And then that's the first question probably you should be asking. But the second thing obviously would then be going to the bank directly. You get an authorization from the client, you go directly to the bank. You can never rely on bank statements or screenshots or whatever given by the client, because that could be forged, right? And there have been cases where that has been forged.
Professor, do you think Wirecard being a fintech plays a part in auditors missing that huge amount of cash?
It's kind of yes and no, in the sense that, you know, if you look at the way the fraud occurred, it's actually quite basic fraud, because they did things like round-tripping. They forged revenues and profits, and also there are questions around in terms of what they recognize as revenue. So these are kind of basic accounting issues, but sometimes because of the fact that it's a fintech, there's always like a black box element to it. Mm-hmm. So you got to ask whether the audit procedures were, you know, whether they were adequate in terms of audit fintech like Wirecard. So that may well be because of that. Too much reliance on management because of this black box element to a fintech.
Reliance on management? Well, what about reliance on technology for these major accounting firms?
Yeah.
You know, you're not really taking the extra step.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of accounting firms today are talking about blockchain and data analytics and so on, right? So sometimes when you look at cases like that, you kind of have to ask whether that's just talk, whether the audit procedures have actually caught up with auditing these kind of companies. I mean, that's a question, whether some of these companies like fintech, crypto firms, that kind of firms, whether it has become too sophisticated for some of these audit firms, even though they claim that they have all these sophisticated data analytics and all these technologies.
All right, Professor, in the UK, the accounting watchdog gave Deloitte, EY, KPMG, and PwC 4 years to split their audit and consulting businesses to improve corporate reporting following a string of high-profile accounting scandals. Can you explain to our listeners how this conflict of interest may arise?
Because over the years, if you look at over the last 10 years or more, for a long time already, the consulting revenues have increased much more quickly than the auditing side. So for many firms today, the audit revenues is actually a very small component. So therefore, the audit services become like a door opener. So a lot of audit firms, they kind of see that, in fact, many of them will say that audit is actually loss-making. It's kind of to open the door. And then they sell other services. So over time, these consulting services become so important that they change the culture, I think, of this firm. So and because a lot of these consulting services, you offer it, you actually are providing to management, you know. So they after a while, you kind of forget that you are supposed to look after the interests of the company and the shareholders. You become too closely aligned with management because you are providing those consulting services to management.
Right. Is this something we should be concerned about here in Singapore? And also to stretch that point a little bit, this whole idea of relationship, right? If I have a relationship with a client, is there a psychological impact where I am afraid to challenge the client even though there are some clear warning signs? Are we missing out this aspect?
Yes, I think it's a problem everywhere. I think it's a problem here too. Now, I interact a lot with auditors and so on too, in the Big Four and so on. I think there's that sense that they see themselves, we want to be close to the CFO and the CEO of those companies, which actually, they are the ones you're auditing.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of these consulting services, the people who make those key decisions are the CFO and the CEO. But these are the people you are supposed to be auditing in that sense.
Right.
So how do you do that? I think we need to reach a stage where they have to go back and think their duty is actually to the shareholders, to the company, not to this management.
Mm. So, Professor, auditors, do you think are reluctant to offend their clients for fear of losing business?
Yeah, I think so. No, when if the consulting services account for, say, 25% of your total fee revenue, then clearly, you know, you're not going to let that 25% that you earn from audit fees affect your 75%. So that's why I think in the UK, they are looking for this operational separation between the audit side and the consulting side.
Okay, we have been talking about the UK, but is there a potential for similar behavior playing out in markets, you know, when we're talking about in terms of conflicts of interest right here in Singapore?
Well, it's everywhere. In Singapore, it's the same. I think at the moment, UK is probably leading the way in recognizing these conflicts and trying to address them. I think the other markets will probably be looking at what is happening to the UK, but it's everywhere. I think this is a reality.
Let's talk about Hin Leong's books. They were audited by Deloitte, which stands by its work. Hyflux was audited by KPMG, same thing, reputable firms. But I guess the broader question is audit quality. I mean, does it need to be stepped up? What more can actually be done?
I think it goes back to enforcement and oversight by the regulator. Whatever it is, you know, even this splitting, right? If you don't enhance the oversight, that's probably not going to help. And I think the other thing is rethink about what the objective of an audit is. I know auditors always say we are not there to discover fraud, for example. Over the recent years, there have been a greater responsibility placed on auditors with regard to that. But still, you know, auditors will always say today that they're not responsible for fraud. But once you see, you know, if you look at some of these cases, like the Hin Leong, right, then you have another firm going in, and then within 2 months, when they actually have the objective of looking for whether there have been wrongdoing, and then in coming up all sorts of, I would say, allegations at this point, right, of fraud. And it's just because they now have this objective of finding out whether there was wrongdoing. So maybe you've got to ask whether audit has to be changed in such a way that there has to be a greater onus on the auditors to look out for possible fraud.
So they should be punished as well, then? Or
yeah,
share the punishment?
They should be much more conscious about the fact that they're... And then especially when you do... If you go back and look at the Hin Leong type situation, right, where you have... And then the Hin Leong type situation is actually, in a way, more challenging than for listed companies because there's no independent audit committee as such, right? This is just a family company. The management is the board. So there's actually nobody in the audit committee to oversee the external auditor to make sure that they external auditor does his job properly. So in a way, private companies will be much worse than listed companies because of the lack of this layer of an audit, independent audit committee.
So since you brought that up, Professor, does the Hin Leong scandal then suggest the need for standards to be raised for private companies?
Yes, I think that at the moment, the problem is private companies, I think that two. One is the issue that I just mentioned, that there's no independent audit committee to oversee the work of the external auditor. Challenge like how much are you having partners spending enough time in doing the audit, or is it most of the work is it done by juniors? So that's one level. The other thing is the independence requirement. You know, auditors kind of have to meet certain requirements in terms of independence. So there are certain services they cannot provide and so on. For private companies, the standards are much lower than for listed companies. So it means that the audit quality may be much lower. Okay, and then, of course, the third issue is when it comes to oversight by the regulator, they tend to focus more on what we call public interest entities. So listed companies will be public interest entities. When they do their regulation and oversight and check the work of the auditors, they are focusing more on these listed companies. So you have these various issues, and that makes private, you know, audits for private companies even, you know, much more questionable in terms of quality.
Prof Mark, just to wrap things up, and I want to jump to something you've been blogging about, the lack of disclosures by listed companies. Could you give us a sense of what issues this poses? I mean, how have things been getting worse, and why are they in such a state right now?
Well, again, it goes back to lack of accountability and enforcement. I think you see that there are many companies making questionable disclosures. When their disclosure lapses, regulators are not very quickly holding them to account. And then over time, the market thinks, oh, okay, it looks like it's okay. If we make a misleading announcement, we just have to correct it. Mm. And nothing happens to us. So over time, it just perpetuates and it just encourages bad behavior. So I think it's a matter of really regulators stepping up and be much faster in taking action against companies which are making misleading disclosures.
Things have to change. I've been speaking with Mark Nguyen Tin, who is Associate Professor of Accounting, NUS Business School. Prof Mark, thank you so much for taking the time. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Most welcome. Okay.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.